أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
فاتحة. هذا خليفة المسيح فيث مي الله بيز هيلب ستيتد. As I mentioned in the previous sermon, Hazrat Muslim Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, has also discussed the circumstances that arose during the Battle of the Confederates, that is, the Battle of the Ditch. I will present these details. He states, since one side of Medina was protected by the ditch, and another side had hills with their natural protection, stone houses and groves of trees, it was impossible for the army to launch a sudden attack. As such, they, that is the disbelievers, took counsel together and decided that it was necessary to try to get the Banu Qurayza, the third Jewish tribe, still living in Medina, to join them and thereby open a path into Medina. Following their counsel, Abu Sufyan, commander of the army of the disbelievers, appointed Huyay bin Akhtab, chief of the banished tribe of Banu Nadir, and principal instigator of Arab tribes against Medina, to get the Banu Qurayza to join them by any means possible. As such, Huyay bin Akhtab went to the Jewish fortress to see the leaders of the Banu Qurayza. At first, they refused to see him. However, when he explained to them that at present the whole of Arabia had assembled to destroy the Muslims, and that this town could not confront the whole of Arabia under any circumstances, and that the army that stood to oppose the Muslims was not an army but a raging ocean. Through these words, he ultimately convinced the Banu Qurayza to commit treason and breach their covenant. It was decided that the army of the disbelievers would try to cross the ditch from the front. And as soon as it was successful in doing so, the Banu Qurayza would attack the other side of Medina, where women and children had been placed without protection, trusting the Banu Qurayza. If the Muslims were to attack from that side, it would completely destroy their resistance, and men, women and children would be killed instantly. It is a fact that if the disbelievers had succeeded with this scheme, even in the slightest, the Muslims would be left without any place of protection. The Banu Qurayza were in a pact with the Muslims, and even if they would not take part in the open battlefield, the Muslims believed that no one would be able to launch an attack on Medina from their side. Due to this very reason, their side was left completely unprotected. The Banu Qurayza and the disbelievers had assessed the circumstances and decided that once the Banu Qurayza joined the disbelievers, they would not assist them openly, lest the Muslims would make arrangements to protect that part of Medina on the side of the Banu Qurayza. They were very clever. In other words, so that the Muslims would not think of attacking from that side as well. This was a very dangerous plot for the Banu Qurayza to join the enemy at a time when the Muslims were completely unaware of this. And when the army of the disbelievers was attacking the Muslim army, made it impossible to protect the other side of Medina at the fortresses of the Banu Qurayza. In fact, it was not only protection that would be rendered impossible. It was not a question of that. Rather, the threat of being attacked increased exponentially. In any case, it was natural for the Muslims to be worried in such circumstances. And efforts were, of course, made to prevent this. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, decided to appoint 500 people to protect Medina. Historians have detailed this in the following manner. When news of the Banu Qurayza violating their treaty reached the Muslims, the apprehension only increased, and they began to worry for their wives and children. The state of the Muslims became exactly in line with what Allah Almighty stated. إِذْ جَاءُوكُمْ مِنْ فَوْقِكُمْ وَمِنْ أَسْفَلَ مِنْكُمْ وَإِذْ زَاغَتِ الْأَبْصَارُ وَبَلَغَتِ الْقُلُوبُ الْحَنَاجِرَ وَتَذُنُّونَ بِاللَّهِ الظُّنُونَ. When they came upon you from above and from below, and when your eyes became distracted and your hearts reached to their throats, and you thought diverse thoughts about Allah. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, and the Muslims were facing the enemy, so they could not move from there. They would take turns guarding various parts of the ditch. Biographers have mentioned 8 posts across the ditch where they would guard. And Hazrat Zubayr bin Al-Awwam, may Allah be pleased with him, was appointed to oversee all of this. Seeing as the Banu Qurayza had ended their pact and joined the besieging tribes, and news was being received that they would attack Medina at any given moment. Hearing all this, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, sent Hazrat Salama bin Aslam, may Allah be pleased with him, with 200 men, and Hazrat Zayd bin Haritha, may Allah be pleased with him, with 300 men to protect Medina, stating that they should keep guard at night in various locations and proclaim Allahu Akbar every now and then. Hazrat Mirza Bashir Ahmad Sahib, may Allah be pleased with him, has related this in the following manner. At this time, as far as apparent means were concerned, the horizon of Medina was immensely dark and gloomy. On all four fronts of the city, thousands of bloodthirsty enemies had set up camp. All of them lay in ambush to find an opportunity so that they could pounce at the Muslims and annihilate them. Within the city, at arm's reach of the Muslims, were the treacherous Banu Qurayza, who were no less than a fierce army in themselves, boasting hundreds of armed young men. They were in a position to attack the Muslims from the rear whenever they so pleased, or whenever an opportunity presented itself. The Muslim women and children who resided in the city were easy prey for them at all times. As a result of this state of affairs, the reality of this cannot remain hidden upon any wise individual. Immense fear and terror surged through the weaker Muslims, and the hypocrites openly criticized مَا وَعَدَنَ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ إِلَّا غُرُورًا. It seems as if the promise of God and His Messenger with respect to the victory and triumph of the Muslims was nothing but lies. Various hypocrites presented themselves before the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, and began to say, O Messenger of Allah, our homes are completely unprotected in the city. Please grant us permission so that we may stay in our homes to defend them. In response to this, the following divine revelation was sent down. وَمَا هِيَ بِعَوْرَةٍ إِن يُرِيدُونَ إِلَّا فِرَارًا. It is incorrect that these people are worried about their homes being exposed. Rather, the fact of the matter is that they seek a way to flee from the field of battle. It was at this very juncture, however, that sincere Muslims exhibited the true colors of their faith. As such, the Holy Quran states, وَلَمَّا رَأَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الْأَحْزَابَ قَالُوا هَذَا مَا وَعَدَنَا اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَصَدَقَ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَمَا زَادَهُمْ إِلَّا إِيمَانًا وَتَسْلِيمًا. And when the believers saw the army of the disbelievers, they said, "This is what Allah and His Messenger promised us. And indeed, Allah and His Messenger are truthful." Hence, this onslaught only added to their faith and submission. However, all equally felt the vulnerable situation and threatening circumstances at hand. In this regard, Allah the Exalted states, إِذْ جَاءُوكُمْ مِنْ فَوْقِكُمْ وَمِنْ أَسْفَلَ مِنْكُمْ وَإِذْ زَاغَتِ الْأَبْصَارُ وَبَلَغَتِ الْقُلُوبُ الْحَنَاجِرَ وَتَذُنُّونَ بِاللَّهِ الظُّنُونَ. Remember the time when the army of the disbelievers came upon you from above you and from below you in hordes, and when your eyes became overwhelmed with anxiety, and your hearts came to your throats, and you began to entertain diverse thoughts about Allah, all in your own way. That time was indeed a time of sore trial for the believers, and they were shaken with a violent shaking. At such a perilous time, how could this small group of Muslims contest, who consisted of various weaker dispositions and hypocrites as well? They did not even have enough men to adequately arrange to stand guard at less secure posts. As a result, this harsh duty of day and night utterly exhausted the Muslims. On the other hand, due to the treachery of the Banu Qurayza, it was necessary to strengthen security in the streets and alleys of the city as well, so that the women and children could be protected. The disbelieving warriors exhausted every possible avenue in an attempt to agonize the Muslims. At times, they would gather at a weaker point and launch an attack, and the Muslims would be forced to regroup there in defense. At this, the disbelievers would immediately redirect their strength and press another point, and the poor Muslims would make haste in that direction. On other occasions, they would wage an attack at two or three points simultaneously, and the Muslim force would be dispersed into smaller fragments. At times, the course of events would take on an extremely delicate state, and the disbelieving army almost penetrated the weaker points to enter the city. These full-fledged attacks were generally warded off by the Muslims with arrows. However, at times, a strategy employed by the disbelieving warriors was that one contingent would shower the Muslims with arrows to hold them back, while another contingent would storm a weaker point of the ditch and wage a general attack in an attempt to cross over. This method of warfare would continue from dawn till dusk, and sometimes it would even carry on during parts of the night. It is also mentioned in history that on one occasion the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, inquired from his companions, the Ansar in particular, about making peace with the Ghatafan tribe. Mentioning the details of this, Hazrat Mirza Bashir Ahmad Sahib, may Allah be pleased with him, writes, "These days were ones of grave pain, apprehension, and danger. As the siege grew longer and longer, the Muslims naturally began to lose their strength to fight. And although they were full of faith and sincerity, their bodies, which of course functioned according to the material law of nature, began to fall weak. When the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, witnessed this state of affairs, he called upon two chieftains of the Ansar, Sa'd bin Mu'adh and Sa'd bin Ubadah, may Allah be pleased with them, and recalling to them all of the circumstances at hand, sought their counsel. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, even proposed, 'If you are in an agreement, it is also possible that we may give the Ghatafan tribe a portion of our wealth, so that this war may be averted.' Sa'd bin Mu'adh, may Allah be pleased with him, and Sa'd bin Ubadah, may Allah be pleased with him, resonated the same words and submitted, 'O Messenger of Allah, If you have received divine revelation in this respect, then we bow before you in obedience. In this case, most definitely, let us act upon this proposition gladly. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, said, Nay, I have not received any revelation in this matter. I only present the suggestion out of my consideration for the hardship you are being made to bear. The two Sa'ds responded, then our suggestion is that if we have never given anything to an enemy while we were idolaters, why then should we do so as Muslims? By God, we shall give them nothing but the strikes of our swords. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, was worried on account of the Ansar, who were the native residents of Medina. Furthermore, in seeking this counsel, the only intent of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, was to perhaps gather insight into the mental state of the Ansar, as to whether they were worried about these hardships or not, and if they were, then to console them. Thus, when this proposal was put forth, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, happily accepted the counsel of both sides, and war continued. As it has been stated before, although the ditch was serving as a strong defensive wall, this does not at all mean that the Muslims were completely safe and protected. Firstly, people like the hypocrites, specifically the Banu Qurayza, who were inclined towards war, were already within Medina. And after breaking the treaty, they manifested themselves as dangerous enemies. On the other side, despite the ditch, there were some places where there was danger of the enemy attacking. And there was a possibility that the enemy would cross the ditch and enter from that area. Keeping this stressful situation in mind, a continuous watch was given in some places, and the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah upon him, himself was part of this watch. The Holy Prophet would supervise himself as well and give his companions reassurance and comfort. And all this would continue both during the day and the night. These nights in Medina were extremely cold, and on top of that, there were the difficulties of hunger. As Aisha, may Allah be pleased with her, relates that the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, would keep watch until the very opening of the trench. When the cold would pain him, he would come to me, and when his body warmed up, he would return to the opening of the trench, and he would say, I fear that people could come from this side. She, Hazrat Aisha, that is, narrates that one day the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, was resting as he did in these nights, and was so tired that he said, if only a righteous man would guard this place tonight. Thus, at the time that he said this, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, heard the sound of weapons. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, asked, who is it? Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, may Allah be pleased with him, replied, O Messenger of Allah, it is I, Sa'd. I have come to stand guard for your safety. However, rather than his own protection, he said, go to such and such place. A part of the trench is weaker there. Guard that spot. The love and loyalty that the devoted companions possessed for the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, was remarkably unique. How they were presenting themselves for his protection. And on the other hand, we see that the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, was prioritizing them over himself. He possessed such courage that he had no concern for his own life, but he worried for the people of Medina. And for this reason, he would often personally be present at various places. And whenever he would apparently go to his tent to rest, most of that time he would be seen prostrating before God and praying. Thus, Hazrat Umm Salama, may Allah be pleased with her, narrates, I was with the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, during the Battle of the Trench, and we were extremely cold. I saw one night that the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, stood up and prayed in his tent for as long as Allah the Almighty willed, meaning a very long prayer to the extent which it was possible. Then he went outside the tent and kept watch for some time. Then I heard the Holy Prophet say, these horsemen of the idolaters are trying to cross the trench. He then called out to Abbad bin Bishr, may Allah be pleased with him, who then responded, I am present. The Holy Prophet asked, is anyone else with you? He replied, yes, I have some companions with me, and we are keeping watch around your tent. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, said, take your companions with you and patrol the trench. These horsemen of the idolaters are circling the trench. They wish to attack you while you are unaware. The Holy Prophet then prayed, Allahumma fadfa anna sharrahum, wansurna alayhim, faaghlibhum, fala yaghlibuhum ahadun ghayruk. O Allah, distance the evil from us and help us against them and defeat them. No one can defeat them except you. Abbad went with his companions, and Abu Sufyan bin Harb and his group were circling a narrow part of the trench. When the Muslims became aware of them, they started throwing stones and shooting arrows, due to which they went back to where they came from, meaning the enemy turned back from that place. As Abbad, may Allah be pleased with him, relates, I returned to the company of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him. I saw that the Holy Prophet was offering prayer. So I afterwards shared the information with the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him. Hazrat Umm Salama, may Allah be pleased with her, narrates, may Allah the Almighty have mercy on Abbad bin Bishr. He stayed near the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him's tent, more than any of the other blessed companions. He always kept watch over the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him. As a Muslim, may Allah be pleased with him, states, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him's courage and attention towards the well-being of the Muslims was such that he would wake up in the cold night and go to one part of the trench and stand guard over it. As Aisha, may Allah be pleased with her, states, that the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, would become so exhausted from standing guard over it in the cold that he would return for a short while to lie under his blanket. And as soon as his body would warm again, he would return to that part of the trench. Owing to him continuously staying awake in this manner, one day he became extremely exhausted and expressed in the night, if only there was a sincere Muslim present at this time so I could sleep. At that very moment, Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas called out, and the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah upon him, asked him what had brought him there. He replied, I have come to stand guard for you. Upon this, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah upon him, stated, I am not in need of a guard. Instead, you should go to the part of the trench where the wall has given in and stand guard over it, so that the Muslims remain safe. And so Sa'd left to stand guard over it, and the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah upon him, was able to sleep. At one place it is written, and this is the curious thing about this, the way it's been further explained, that when in the beginning the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, arrived in Medina and the threat level was quite high, it was Sa'd on that occasion as well who came to make rounds like this. In the same days, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, heard some people's weapons clanking and asked who it was. So Abbad bin Bashir, as a Muslim, may Allah be pleased with him, has recorded his name as Abbad bin Bashir. But actually, because Hazrat Muslim, may Allah be pleased with him, said his name like this in volume 20 of Anwar al-Ulum, it's written like this, which is just an innocent typographical mistake. In any case, the reference for this passage in Anwar al-Ulum has been derived from Sirah al-Halabiyyah, and in that biography, his name is written as Abbad bin Bishr. I'm clarifying this because then afterwards some people end up writing to me, at such and such place it's written like this while you've said it in another way. What is the actual way of saying it? So anyhow, his real name is Abbad bin Bishr. It may be that it was just written mistakenly in this way, or that Hazrat Muslim Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, accidentally said it in this manner. In any case, Hazrat Muslim Maud writes that Abbad bin Bashir said, Abbad bin Bishr said, it is I. So the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, asked, is there anyone else with you as well? He replied, there is also a group of companions who have come to keep watch at the perimeter of your tent. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, replied, right now the idolaters are trying to fight a way across the trench. Go there and battle them. Don't worry about my tent. An incident about the bravery of Hazrat Safiya, may Allah be pleased with her, is also mentioned during this battle. The details of the account meaning that the wives of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah upon him, his aunt and other female family members were with the rest of the women. And their appointed lookout guard was Hazrat Hassan bin Thabit, may Allah be pleased with him. When the Banu Qurayza announced their betrayal, the Jews of that area also, in some way or another, busied themselves in trying to inflict harm upon the Muslims. Hazrat Safiya, the paternal aunt of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, states that on one occasion, a group of 10 Jews came up to our fort and began walking around it, as though looking for any opportunity for when or how they might infiltrate the fort. One of the Jews walked up very close to one of the walls of the fort. I was watching him. I told Hassan to go and take care of him, to which Hassan replied, O daughter of Abdul Muttalib, by God, you know that I am not capable of this. If I were, I would have certainly marched forward with the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him. Hazrat Safiya, may Allah be pleased with her, says, when Hassan said this, I grabbed a stick, left the fort, and slammed it so hard on the head of the Jew walking around our fort that his head split open and he fell down on the spot. I returned back to the fort and said to Hassan, at least go down and retrieve his belongings from him, meaning as spoils of war. Hassan replied, O daughter of Abdul Muttalib, I have no need for his belongings. So I said to him, then cut off his head and throw it at the other Jews to scare them away and dissuade them from coming this way. Hazrat Hassan, may Allah be pleased with him, replied that he did not have it in him to do so. Hazrat Safiya then went ahead and cut the man's head off herself to throw it at the remaining Jews. She went herself, cut off the man's head, and threw it over the fort wall. Seeing this, the Jewish men became scared and said, we knew that Muhammad, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, couldn't possibly leave the women without some protection. There are definitely people with these women to protect them. And so the men ran away. When the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, was informed of this, he awarded Hazrat Safiya, may Allah be pleased with her, a portion of the spoils of war, as he did for the male soldiers. Mentioning this incident in the life and character of the seal of the prophets, Hazrat Mirza Bashir Ahmad Sahib, may Allah be pleased with him, writes, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, had generally gathered the women and children of the city in a special area, which could be likened to a fortress. However, a sufficient number of Muslims could not be made available to adequately protect them. Especially at such times when the enemy onslaught in the battlefield was at full force, the Muslim women and children would practically be left unguarded, and only such men would be left to protect them, who, for some reason or another, were unfit for the field of battle. Therefore, capitalizing on a situation like the one just mentioned, the Jews proposed to attack one such area of the city where the women and children had gathered. These people sent a spy ahead of them to assess the situation in this quarter of the city. It so happened that the only person present near the women at the time was Hassan bin Thabit, the poet, who was unable to go to the battlefield due to his being very weak at heart. When the women noticed this Jewish enemy surveying the encampment in such a suspicious manner, Safiya bint Abdul Muttalib, the paternal aunt of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, said to Hassan, this individual is an enemy Jew who is prowling about to acquire intelligence and is bent upon mischief. Kill him so that he does not return to his people and cause harm to us. However, Hassan could not find the courage to do so. Therefore, Hazrat Safiya moved forward herself and fought the Jew, after which she killed him and he fell to the ground. Then, according to her own proposal, the Jewish spy was beheaded and thrown to that side of the stronghold where the Jews had gathered, so that they would not dare to attack the Muslim women, and were made to believe that they were guarded by many men. Hence, this strategy proved to be successful. As a result, the Jewish people were awestruck and turned back. As a Muslim old has also narrated this incident, he states, the Banu Qurayza were constantly waiting for an opportunity to infiltrate Medina and kill the women and children without raising suspicion among the Muslims. One day, the Banu Qurayza sent a spy to check if the women and children were unguarded or if there were soldiers designated for their protection. The spy arrived near the specific enclosure where the most vulnerable families who were at the greatest risk from the enemy had been gathered. He began circling the area, observing whether there were any Muslim soldiers hidden nearby. While surveying the area, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him's aunt, Hazrat Safiya noticed him. It so happened that at that time only one Muslim man was present, and he was unwell. Hazrat Safiya approached him and said, "A man has been roaming around the women's quarters for a while, and he refuses to leave. He keeps looking around. Surely he is a spy. You should confront him before he gathers information and the enemy attacks us." The ailing companion declined to confront the spy. Hazrat Safiya then took a large staff herself, confronted the man, and with the help of the other women, succeeded in killing him. Upon investigation, it was discovered that the man was indeed a Jewish spy from the Banu Qurayza. This further alarmed the Muslims, making them realize that even this side of Medina was no longer safe. Nevertheless, the threat from the front lines was so severe that they could not arrange to protect this area. Despite this, however, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, considered the protection of the women a priority. He stationed 500 of his 1,200 soldiers in the city for their protection, leaving only 700 to defend the trench and face the enemy of 18 to 20,000. The incident of Hazrat Ali may Allah be pleased with him killing Amr bin Abd Wud Amiri during this time is also mentioned. The details of this incident are as follows. When the disbelievers besieged Medina, their leaders agreed to launch a collective attack. They began searching for a narrow section of the trench that would allow the cavalry to breach the defenses and reach the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, and his companions. Eventually, they found such a spot which the Muslims were unaware of. At that point, Ikrimah bin Abi Jahl, Nawfal bin Abdullah, Dirar bin al-Khattab, Hubayra bin Abi Wahab, and Amr bin Abd Wud crossed the trench. Amr bin Abd Wud was so renowned for his bravery that he was considered equivalent to 1,000 men in battle. He had been wounded during the Battle of Badr and could not participate in the Battle of Uhud due to his injuries. He had vowed that he would not oil his hair until he had killed Muhammad, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him. God forbid. Arrogantly, he called out to the Muslims after crossing the trench, challenging them by announcing aloud, "O you who desire paradise, come and face me. Either I will send you to paradise or you will send me to hell." When no one stood to face him, Hazrat Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, desired to rise up, but the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, told him to sit down, reminding him that it was Amr bin Abd Wud on the other side. However, when Amr called out a second or third time, Hazrat Ali rose again. This time, the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, himself allowed him to go, wrapped his own turban on Hazrat Ali's head, granted him his sword, and sent him off with prayers. As Hazrat Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, approached Amr, he addressed him, saying, "I have heard that you made a vow that if a man from the Quraysh asks you for two things, you will agree to one of them." Amr replied, "Yes." Hazrat Ali said, "The first thing I will say to you is that you should become a Muslim, and by accepting the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, become the recipients of God's blessings." Amr said, "This won't be possible." Hazrat Ali said, "If you do not accept this, then prepare yourself to fight me." Amr started laughing and said, "I never thought anyone would speak to me in this way." He then asked Hazrat Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, his name and heritage. When Hazrat Ali told him, Amr said, "Your father was a friend of mine. Go and send an elder in your place." "Nephew," he said, referring to Hazrat Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, "you are but a child and I do not wish to shed your blood. Send one of your elders instead." Hazrat Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, said, "You might not wish to shed my blood, but I will not hesitate to shed yours." Now, blinded by rage, Amr jumped down from his horse and hamstrung it, causing it to fall. He killed his horse and came down to fight. Mad like the flame of a fire, he advanced towards Hazrat Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, and swung his sword upon him with such great force that it pierced through his shield, struck his forehead, causing a slight wound. But in the same moment, Hz. Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, raised a slogan glorifying Allah and attacked with such force that his enemy was left on the defensive. Hz. Ali's sword struck Amr's shoulder and came all the way down, leaving him writhing as he fell to his death. Some narrations record that there were not two but three things from which Hz. Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, told Amr he had to choose. The first was that he should return. One of the options which Hz. Ali, may Allah be pleased with him, gave him was to go back. Amr said that he would not comply. The next option was that Amr should become a Muslim, and the third was that he should fight. When Amr was killed, his comrades became frightened and fled upon their horses. Hz. Zubair, may Allah be pleased with him, followed them and killed Nawfal bin Abdullah. Among them was also Hubayra bin Abi Wahab, who was the husband of Hani, Hz. Ali's sister. Hz. Zubair swung his sword upon him with such force that it cut through his horse's collarbone. According to another narration, after Amr was killed, Hubayra and Dirar bin Khattab attacked Hz. Ali, may Allah be pleased with him. But then they both fled as Hz. Ali fought back. In fact, Hubayra even left his armor behind as he fled, despite him being regarded as one of the Quraysh's best horse riders. According to one narration, when Dirar bin Khattab, the brother of Hz. Umar, may Allah be pleased with him, ran away, Hz. Umar, may Allah be pleased with him, chased after him. Dirar suddenly stopped and took aim with his spear at Hz. Umar, but then stopped himself from attacking him. He addressed Hz. Umar and said, "Umar, remember this favor of mine, that I did not attack you. It is written how Hz. Umar, may Allah be pleased with him, recalled this favor. It was not a favor of Dirar upon him, rather it was a favor of Allah the Almighty upon him. And perhaps the prayers of Hazrat Umar, may Allah be pleased with him, that on the occasion of the victory of Makkah, Dirar accepted Islam." Following this, he wholeheartedly took part in the wars fought by the Muslims. He fought bravely in each battle and was martyred in the Battle of Yamama. According to some narrations, he was not martyred. Rather, he lived a long life and died in a state of being a Muslim. After the killing of Amr ibn Abdiwud, the disbelievers sent a message to the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, stating that they would pay 10,000 dirhams to retrieve his body. The Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, stated, "Take him, we do not take money for the dead." According to some narrations, Nawfal bin Abdullah was killed in a separate incident. The details are that one day he mounted his horse and paced ahead in order to jump over the trench. However, the horse was unable to cross the trench and fell inside along with its rider. Through this, Allah the Almighty brought about his end and he broke his neck upon falling into the trench. The idolaters sent a delegation in order to retrieve his body and offered to pay money to the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him. However, he stated, "We do not need any money in exchange for him, and nor do we stop you from burying him." Hz. Muslim Aud, may Allah be pleased with him, has also mentioned the killing of Nawfal as follows. The enemy, whilst launching an attack upon the trenches, would at times succeed in crossing over the trench. As such, one day, some of the prominent generals from among the disbelievers were able to cross over the trench. However, the Muslims fought so relentlessly that they had no choice but to retreat. In this particular incident, one of the prominent chiefs of the disbelievers, whose name was Nawfal, died whilst trying to cross over the trench. He was such a prominent chief that the disbelievers thought that if his body was mutilated, then this would be a source of great embarrassment for them, and they would not be able to show face in the whole of Arabia. Thus, they sent a message to the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, that if he were to return his body, they would be willing to pay 10,000 dirhams. They thought that since they had cut off the nose and ears of the chiefs and leaders among the Muslims, in fact, even to the paternal uncle of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, therefore the Muslims would also perhaps do the same to their leaders, and thereby bring humiliation to their people. However, the commandments of Islam are completely against this, and it does not permit to mutilate the bodies. Hence, when the message of the disbelievers reached the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah upon him, he stated, what are we going to do with this body? It is of no use to us, and we do not want anything in return for it. You are free to take his body. We have nothing to do with it. In any case, there are further details in this regard which will be continued in the future, inshallah, God willing. From today, the ijtimaas of Lajna and Ansar will commence. Just as I reminded the Khuddam, the Lajna and Ansar should also focus on prayers, especially during these days, and sending salutations upon the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him. May Allah the Almighty enable everyone to do so, and enable you all to fulfill the purpose of these gatherings, rather than just spending your time on leisurely activities and engaging in conversations. May Allah the Almighty bless this in every respect.
Alhamdulillah, nahmaduhu wa nasta'inuhu wa nastaghfiruhu wa nu'minu bihi wa natawakkalu alayhi wa na'udhu billahi min shururi anfusina wa min sayyi'ati a'malina man yahdihillahu fala mudilla lahu ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد ان لا اله الا الله ونشهد ان محمدا عبده ورسوله عباد الله رحمكم الله ان الله يأمر بالعدل واللسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون اذكروا الله يذكركم وادعوه يستجب لكم ولذكر الله أكبر